Bon dia.
Good morning. I thank you all for being here. I wish you all a good morning. A brief presentation of the table. The chair of the Portuguese Parliament is here with us, as well as our guest, the European Commissioner, Mr. Tibor Navracsics, to present the European Commission program for 2018. The President of the Republic, the presence of the Chair of Parliament, the President of Parliament, unfortunately isn't feeling too well. He is having some problems with his voice, but he will take the floor now. So I do thank him dearly for the effort that he's making, Mr. President of Parliament. Mr. European Commissioners and Chairlady of the European Affairs Commission, Members of Parliament, Ladies and Gentlemen. The reason why we're here today is of our direct interest as Portuguese citizens and European citizens. It has an impact on our activity as Members of Parliament and in our concrete lives for every single one of us. For Portugal, a member of the EU, without opting out, committed to the European construction since we joined in 1986, the European issues have to do with our daily national lives directly. As such, we need to analyze carefully the working program of the European Commission for 2018. The motto is pertinent, an agenda for a more united Europe, a stronger Europe, more democratic Europe. This is what we want to do. It is a program that represents continuity to conclude the work that has been ongoing, and it is a forward-looking document that points towards new initiatives as well. The first include areas as important as digital, cybersecurity, the circular economy, or the energy union. In the framework of the current economic framework, the document points to the European growth. Portugal has overcome the EU average at the moment. However, as the working program mentions, there is still a lot to be done in order to complete the economic and monetary union. We consider this a challenge for the countries that are members of the euro area. We should take into account specifically two proposals, the creation of a European Monetary Fund and having a fiscal line within the European budget for the euro area. Those are two proposals that are going in the right direction. However, there is still more to be done. A main concern that still exists is the need for the euro area to perfect its capacity to face and challenge the asymmetric shocks that are happening. The goal of convergence shouldn't be overlooking not just the possible candidates for joining the EU, but also for those who are members and yet are confronted with the nefarious conditions of pro-cyclical policies. We are also following the pillar of social rights. There will be a special summit in Gothenburg. By moving forward in these areas, the document isn't just focusing on these aspects. For example, the capacity for external projection of the EU. Today, we are stating that we are going towards an increasingly global world, and therefore the challenge or the answer to these challenges will only be attained in union so that the voice of each one of the partners has the capacity to be heard externally in a more effective manner. From our side, a nation that has always been present in other continents, we are open towards strengthening the ties with Africa, Latin America, and particularly Mercosur. as a Euro-Atlantic nation state, we know that the relationships with the United States and Canada have lasted for centuries, and they will continue to do so. As an attachment to the program, where we have the initiatives that the European Commission proposes to move forward with, there is one that stands out of great interest to Portugal. I'm talking about the civil protection mechanism. It is to be developed as a force with its own operational capabilities. We know, everyone knows the impact of the forest fires in Portugal. Everyone knows also that European solidarity, which we duly thank, hasn't always been the swiftest nonetheless because of the ways in which the European civil protection mechanism currently operates. That is why we see as desirable this strengthening of the cooperation in this field. The emergency situation specter is much wider than just forest fires. It encompasses natural disasters as well as technological disasters. This initiative also has the potential to bring the Europe of citizens closer together. Its fulfillment reflects one of the most noble sentiments of humanity, solidarity. In sum, Mr. Commissioners, Members of Parliament, Vice Chair, the working program of the European Commission is rich, it's complex, it comes from business as usual, and it merits our care and our commitment and dedication. So, Members of Parliament, it's up to you to pronounce and voice your consent. And for me, as President of Parliament, I would like to thank you all for being here today. Commissioners, you may know that we are aware of the rights and duties incumbent on us according to the Treaty of Lisbon, which is still up to date and can still be implemented and fulfilled. Thank you very much. Mr. President of Parliament, Vice President of Parliament, European Commissioner responsible for Education, Culture, Youth and Sports, Madam Secretary of State for European Affairs, Members of Parliament, Members of European Parliament, Members of the Legislative Parliaments of the Azores and Madeira, Ambassadors, Representative of the European Commissioner in Lisbon, Representative of the European Parliament in Lisbon, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to thank the President of Parliament for being here and the effort to be here today. This is an important annual milestone for European affairs and the political follow-up by this Parliament. I would like to thank the Commissioners for being here, for your availability presenting to us the European Commission Working Programme 2018. I would also like to thank the presence of the people in attendance. The meeting that we are now beginning is a hearing. And for the first time, we have two members of the European Commissioner Tibor Navracsics, responsible for culture and youth and sports, and the European Commissioner who will be with us this afternoon, Mr. Julian King, who is responsible for the Security Union. The President of the European Commission, Mr. Juncker, in the State of the European Union in September, presented an optimistic view and a positive agenda for Europe. He spoke of favorable wins, and he asked us to make the most of these wins to define the future of Europe. Truth is, the European Union is going through better times today. The economy is growing. It has created jobs. Confidence in the European Union is now returning. It is in this favorable framework, but that won't last forever, that the European Commission presents a working program with two different time spans. We have initiatives up to 2018, and then initiatives that are more forward-looking up to 2025. It is the motto for a more cohesive union, a stronger and more democratic union, as well as fulfilling the 10 priorities of the Juncker Commission. The work that we have to do at the European Affairs Commission follows this working program as its roadmap and also reflects the importance of our priorities as a member state of this union. As a parliament, we connect the European institutions, and if they are not linked to us, then they won't have this tie that connects European citizens every single day. We share the priorities defined in the European Commission program, from the need to create more jobs, more growth, more investment, up to the need of having a new Europe. The focus on the digital economy that doesn't overlook a sustainable and secure union. The need to create an energy market, focusing particularly on the electricity market, which is crucial for the competitiveness of some member states, as is our case. It is a priority for the European Union and for our country in specific to complete the economic and monetary union through the third pillar, the creation of the European Monetary Fund, and ensuring a true comprehensive banking union as soon as possible. Citizens and companies need these measures. The European Pillar for Social Rights is an achievement of what is socially fair for our workers in a single market. The challenges for security and defense that we need to respond to in a responsible and manner of solidarity are today very important. The impact of Brexit will change European Union as of March 2019. And we have an opportunity now to mold the future, a European Union at 27 member states, as is in this program for 2018. There are many challenges, but we reiterate the fact that we have favorable winds. This working program, as a document that is an instrument, will bring efficient and democratic responses to the challenges that we are facing today at the European Union. These measures are the ones that will be discussed here today, and they will be followed by Parliament in 2018. National parliaments are the bastions of the fundamental values of the European Union. They're the guardians of these values, and we should never forget this. Ladies and gentlemen, I will begin by thanking, on behalf of my commission, your presence here today and the presence of the Commissioner Tibor Navracsis, and I pass the floor to you, Mr. Commissioner. Thank you.
President of the Parliament, Madam Chair, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. First, I would like to thank Ms. Regina Bastos and the Committee for European Affairs for inviting me to present the European Commission's work programme for 2018 and the priorities in my portfolio. Hearings like this have always been good opportunities to have a dialogue with the representatives of the citizens of Europe about our common concerns and future ambitions. As you all know, the work programme is the Commission's commitment to the Member States and to European citizens about what we will do in the coming year, and 2018 will be crucial because Europe is regaining its strength and we must take advantage of this momentum. From the start of its mandate, the Commission has focused on the big things, where effective European action can make a concrete difference. Over the last year, solid progress was made in key areas and results delivered across the 10 priorities. The work programme for 2018 that was announced on the 24th of October aims at continuing this work. It fully reflects the announcements made in President Juncker's 2017 State of the Union Address and sets out an agenda for a more united, stronger, and more democratic Europe. It has a twofold focus. First, we set out a limited number of new proposals which we will deliver by May 2018 so that the legislative work in the European Parliament and in the Council can be finished before the European parliamentary elections in June 2019. The Commission has already tabled more than 80% of the proposals needed under the 10 priorities set out by President Juncker in 2014. Now, we will focus on getting the remaining proposals on the table and working with the European Parliament and the Council to see them adopted. Our focus is on the limited number of proposals needed to complete the strategies we have set out. To boost jobs, growth, and investment, the Commission will pursue work to deliver on the Circular Economy Action Plan and to complete the Digital Single Market, the Energy Union, the Capital Markets Union, the Economic and Monetary Union, and the Banking Union. An initiative on fair taxation in the digital economy, a social fairness package, and a proposal to improve the EU food supply chain will all contribute to a deeper and fairer internal market with a strengthened industrial base. We will also table targeted new measures to complete the Security Union and deliver on the EU agenda on migration and the global strategy, and we strengthen the Union's civil protection mechanism so that we are better prepared to help in situations such as the tragic and devastating forest fires we have seen recently in Portugal and Spain. Finally, the Commission will pursue its balanced and progressive trade policy to harness globalization by finalizing agreements with Japan, Singapore, and Vietnam, and we pursue negotiations with Mexico and Mercosur. The second focus of our work program is more forward-looking and aims to prepare the Union of 2025 and beyond. A more united Union will require a credible enlargement perspective for front-runners candidates in the Western Balkans. To build a stronger Union, the Commission will table a proposal for the future multi-annual financial framework. We need a budget that helps us to meet citizens' expectations of an EU that delivers on the things that matter most and that contributes to the long-term sustainability of the Union. We will also propose more efficient single market lawmaking and more efficiency and consistency in implementing the common foreign policy. We will adopt a reflection paper on a sustainable European future and a communication on the future of EU energy and climate policy and propose an extension of the tasks of the European Public Prosecutor's Office to also tackle terrorism. For a more democratic Union, we will make proposals for the creation of a permanent and accountable European Minister of Economy and Finance, an initiative on further enhancing subsidiarity and proportionality, and a communication on enhancing efficiency at the helm of the European Union. We will also propose an initiative on the enforcement of the rule of law. Ladies and gentlemen, beyond the priorities set out in the work programme for 2018, I am also firmly convinced that the areas under my portfolio, education, culture, youth and sport, will have a key role to play in order to build a more united, stronger and more democratic Europe, both now and the horizon of 2025 and beyond. To tackle the deep structural changes and challenges facing Europe, we need to build resilience at the individual, economic, and societal level. Resilience is the key to empowering EU citizens, enabling them to be in control of their lives, make the most of their talents, and become engaged, confident members of society. It is crucial in keeping our economy competitive, boosting innovation and creativity. And resilience is the glue we need to build inclusive, strong, and open communities. Education, training, mobility, and transnational cooperation are critical in boosting resilience. Providing both basic and high-level skills and competencies, reducing inequalities, promoting entrepreneurial mindsets, fostering inclusive, stable, and democratic societies, and making a success of migration and globalization. And Europe will only reach its innovation potential by fostering creativity and solid investment in education, research, and innovators. We have to give Europeans the forward-looking knowledge, skills, and competencies they need to innovate and prosper in the future world of work. We need to give them opportunities to create a European identity, building on our common values and cultures. We have to empower them to articulate and engage, participate and shape the future of a Europe of democracy, solidarity and inclusion. And we must work even harder to ensure that these opportunities are accessible to all people. In particular, this means reaching out to young people. These are the principles which will guide my work in the various areas of my portfolio in 2018. They are also at the heart of my reflections on the longer-term action that will be needed at EU level to support member states effectively. That is why I have decided to organize the first European Education Summit next January to address some of the core issues we face when it comes to our education systems. How to tackle low achievement in basic skills, how to correct the inequalities that we see in our education systems, how to attract more and more effective investment in education. European countries share many challenges that have a massive impact on how education and training is structured and delivered, such as the changing nature of work, the fluid nature of learning, and the digital transformation. EU cooperation is vital in finding common solutions. Portugal is one of those European countries that have made the fastest progress over the last few years. Results from the OECD's PISA 2015 survey, for example, show Portuguese pupils performing above the EU average for the first time. The share of top-performing pupils has grown, and the percentage of low performance has fallen. However, more needs to be done in other areas such as early school leaving. The EU has set itself the target to reduce the share of pupils dropping out to 10% by 2020. Portugal has made impressive progress, reducing its rates from 34% in 2008 to 14% in 2016. Still, the share remains above the EU average of 10.7%. It is also very high for boys. I encourage you to keep up the fight against early school leaving, bearing in mind that with the long-awaited rise of employment, young people might feel the pull of the job market even before they acquire the full set of competences they will need in an increasingly knowledge-based world. More work is also needed in recruiting talented and motivated teachers and offering them better career prospects, as well as modernizing higher education in order to tackle the high-level skills gap which persists all across the European Union. In these areas and many others, the European Commission is ready to support member states with a wide range of tools. One of them is the Strategic Framework for Education and Training 2020. This includes peer reviews or peer learning exercises, exchanges of best practices, elaborating guidelines and assessment tools through expert groups. In short, collaboration on a large array of issues identified by the Commission together with Member States as crucial in learning from each other and improving each national system. We also offer technical assistance in cooperation with the OECD or other experts to design and implement major school education reforms. The new Structural Reform Support Service, the European Structural and Investment Funds, Erasmus Plus, and other tools are available to provide support always on the request of national authorities. Portugal has always been and remains keen to use structural funds to tackle education issues. A number of EU actions specifically target higher education. Last May, the Commission adopted its renewed EU agenda for higher education, which tries to tackle the current challenges in higher education, the mismatch between the skills Europe needs and the skills it has, persistent and growing social divisions, the innovation gap, and the efficiency of higher education systems. One of the key measures I put on the table is the European initiative tracking graduates to improve our knowledge on how they progress in their careers or further education. Later this month, education ministers will adopt a council recommendation on this initiative, which will be a major step forward in closing the skills mismatch. But I want to do more to help member states modernize their education and training systems, because the evidence shows that Europeans are still not top education performers and that learning outcomes are not improving, especially for the most vulnerable and disadvantaged students. Educational practice needs to exemplify our common values, ensuring no one is left behind, sharing what unites us, and helping to form societies that are resilient and forward-looking. I will be targeting some of these challenges in a package of measures I intend to present in January. It would include a proposal for a revision to the 2006 recommendation on key competencies for lifelong learning, a proposal for a council recommendation on promoting common values through education, and an action plan on the future of learning in the digital era. Let me add a few words on Erasmus Plus, one of the biggest success stories of the European Union. This year, we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of the programme. Erasmus Plus and its predecessors have benefited 9 million people over these three decades, helping to develop a whole generation of open-minded people who identify with Europe the way they identify with the towns, cities, regions and countries they come from. Erasmus can create an even deeper understanding of different cultural and historic backgrounds. It can promote particular ways of thinking that are good for instilling resilience, open-mindedness, a readiness to understand and respect different points of view, as well as a desire to seek mutual understanding. Erasmus transmits these values by helping mostly young people build personal connections and friendships. It therefore has an important role in building a fair and resilient Europe and a sense of community. That is why we have to ensure that even more people from a wider range of backgrounds can benefit from Erasmus in the future. I count on your support in this. Ladies and gentlemen, 2018 will be the European Year of Cultural Heritage. As Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said in his 2017 State of the Union speech, this will be the opportunity to celebrate Europe's cultural diversity. Cultural heritage is one of the most valuable European assets. It is indeed a legacy from the past, but even more than that, it is crucial in building our future. The year will see hundreds of thousands of events take place all over Europe. Thanks to the hard work of the National Coordinator in Portugal, I am very happy to see the richness of initiatives and events planned to celebrate the year here in your country. The European Year of Cultural Heritage is a truly European project. I want us to use this year to reach out to all citizens, especially to young people, to remind us all that we are bound together by our heritage, our identity, and our culture. Turning to youth issues, next year will be important in the preparation of the future of EU youth strategy. Before the summer of 2018, the Commission will table its proposal so that youth ministers can discuss and adopt a new framework by the end of next year. We are currently listening to the views of all those concerned, those of young people in particular, on what this new cooperation framework should look like. A very important feature of the new EU youth strategy will be improved ways of engaging with young people from all backgrounds and making our dialogue with them even more representative and effective. 2018 will also see the further development of the European Solidarity Corps. We know that many young people are socially engaged. Already now, 1 in 4 is taking part in voluntary activities. This is why President Juncker proposed to create the European Solidarity Corps with the aim to involve, by 2020, 100,000 young people. Since December 2016, around 39,000 have already signed up for this new initiative, almost 10% of them of Portuguese nationality. I'm proud of their eagerness to make a difference and support those most in need. And whilst they help others, they also gain new competencies and insights that will inspire them also in their further professional and personal life. I am doing all I can to make this initiative a success. In sport, the European Commission will continue to promote ethical standards and the principles of good governance. This is fundamental to protect sport organisations at all levels from the risks they face and restore the trust of supporters and citizens more broadly. In 2018, we will also intensify the campaign for a healthy lifestyle that we launched recently during the third and very successful European Week of Sport. Sport and physical activity should receive adequate attention in schools, since acquiring positive habits at an early age can go a long way to ensuring people's lifelong fitness and well-being. Ladies and gentlemen, this was but a brief summary of the Commission's priorities in education, youth, culture and sport. Nevertheless, I trust that it shows our determination to obtain the best possible results in these fields at EU level. But we need the commitment of Member States to achieve our aims. I know that I can count on you, Portugal, as an enthusiastic partner in this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Fazemos agora uma para café.
We will now have a short coffee break. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. We will return in 15 minutes' time for the discussion. Thank you. And thank you again to the President of Parliament.
Muito obrigada.
Thank you very much for returning on time.
Thank you for coming back to the debate. Temos agora...
We will now have the questions asked by our guests. So the members of parliament and guests who have previously enrolled or registered for questions, we have 9 requests. So with some margin of tolerance, we will have 25 to 30 minutes. And then 30 minutes for the commissioner to reply to the questions, which is then the 1 hour allocated for the commissioner to be with us. Mr. Commissioner will have to leave without any delay at 12 o'clock because he will be at the Web Summit. As such, the table will be tolerant in 30 seconds only. We will only give you 30-second tolerance. If you don't want to use the whole 30 minutes... We will only be able to extend it in 30 seconds. So I will ask that you comply with the time periods, and let's move on to the questions. Member of Parliament Margarida Matos, Vice Chair of the European Affairs Commission, will now have the floor, and she is part of the Socialist Parliamentary Group. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I will begin by welcoming Mr. Commissioner and greeting everyone in attendance, diplomats, members of parliament from the Azores and Madeira, and other people who have attended this debate today. When we discuss the European Commission work program for 2018, our temptation, or my temptation, would be to address a series of subjects that is much more encompassing than the time that I have allocated, which is obviously understandable. I would also be tempted to focus on the issues of education, which are the ones I'm most associated with. And I think that the Mr. Commissioner would also feel happier and more comfortable in replying more directly to the matters of education. But that's not what I will do. First off, I would like to congratulate the work program by the Commission. The Commission has its own responsibility under the treaties, and so it has a role of being a driver in the process of European construction. I would also like to highlight that this hearing for the European Commission work programs at national parliaments, together with the speech or the address of the State of the Union by President Juncker, seems to be a way of bringing citizens closer to the European construction process and the democratization of the European Union. I would like to raise 4 specific points from the European Commission program, beginning with the issue of the market, the internal market. The European Commission values its focus in the digital market, the capital market, and the energy market. All of them are important for Portugal. I would also like to highlight the references made to climate change, the continuation of the climate summit, where today, more than in Paris, the role of Europe is particularly important. And now we'll begin with a point which is very important for us and has to do with the rule of law. Today, we are confronted with situations that have to do with jeopardizing the different dimensions that govern the rule of law. And we understand also that the European Commission has a reduced margin because it only has the atomic bomb and not the process to get to it. So I would like to highlight as being highly positive the situation of the European Commission to have this initiative to respect the rule of law in the European Union. So once more, thank you very much for the presentation that we have, this global approach by the European Commissioner. Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Member of Parliament, for complying with this time. And now Duarte Marques from the Social Democratic Parliamentary Group will... No, he's giving his turn to... Member of Parliament Pedro Mota Soares from the CDS-PP. Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to greet the Commissioner. Thank you very much for being here today and for presenting the program for 2018. And I would like to say good morning to everyone here in attendance. Today, we will have a good working session, I'm sure of that, with the hearing by the Commissioner this morning and then Commissioner King this afternoon. So we will be dividing some of the issues which are very important for the European Union. They have to do with security and defense. With this discussion that is being held, this will be discussed in the afternoon. First of all, I'd like to address some of the areas of the Commissioner's portfolio and then others which perhaps aren't as directly related to you, but that you mentioned. The first has to do with an important initiative for Europe as a whole, and which had a significantly positive impact, the Youth Employment Initiative, the Youth Initiative. This was very important at a time when youth unemployment was very high in Portugal. Luckily, since 2013, we have been reducing reducing unemployment in Portugal. Yet our unemployment rate is still quite high when compared to Europe. So for us, it is important to strengthen these mechanisms. I know that in 2016, there was the creation of a European Solidarity Corps, which is significant, and its dimension is different. From our understanding, and I'd like to hear your opinion, it shouldn't replace initiatives such as Erasmus Plus or the Youth Guarantee. So if you could perhaps strike a balance between these two, give us a status report, I would appreciate it. And then something which isn't directly in your portfolio, but your experience is unrivaled in terms of international affairs or foreign affairs, and I would like to address a subject here. For the first time since 2013, I believe, in the European Commission program, there isn't a specific reference to the TTIP. We know all the circumstances surrounding this agreement with the United States, but I think that perhaps it isn't positive from the European Union side to withdraw this agreement, this partnership from our agenda. Another third aspect which is missing from the work program, but which is relevant for Europe and particularly for Portugal, is the energy interconnections. We speak highly, a lot, about this union for energy, this energy union. We talk about regulation, supervision. But there is still this barrier that we must overcome. It is particularly difficult for the Iberian Peninsula to guarantee this interconnection. Recently, as I heard saying that it is fundamental to overcome this barrier, and I would like to hear your opinion on this subject, energy. And then something that is on the work program is innovation. As such, we have a need to find new funding for startups and innovation. We see that in Europe, 80% of funding comes from traditional bank loans and only 20% using alternative means of funding, whereas in the United States, it's the opposite. And I think it's important for us to address this matter and perhaps to change the status quo a bit. So I'd like you to speak a bit about that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pedro Mota Soares. And now Miguel Tiago from the Communist Party. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to greet the Commissioner and thank you for the presentation you gave us. First of all, I apologize for not being here in the beginning of the meeting. It was my comrade, Paulo Santos, who represented my parliamentary group. There will be a meeting this afternoon on other subjects, yes. But essentially, when it comes to this European Commission work program, what we identify is a continuity of the line the European Union has been following thus far, without practically any sort of nuance, identifying a lot of the problems, but offering solutions to the problems as the intensifying the what led to the programs, to the problems themselves. In the information society, in education, this dimension of intervention by the EU is not new in any single way. Programs that can be shown in the area of youth as being a continuous care or patches for problems that have been identified, namely in employment but also access to education, end up being a sort of adornment, decoration by the European Union to mask situations. For example, this program that has just been mentioned for youth employment that the European Union supposedly developed with great intensity, the results were practically null in Portugal. And when there were any sort of effects, what we saw was that in the context of the degradation of the living conditions in general, youth is also included in this, of course, most of the jobs created or supported were under the guise of internships, funded internships, where I dare say not even companies benefited from them at times, because labor did not penetrate and it didn't bring capabilities to the production area. We're talking about internships that were poorly paid many times, and then those young people didn't get a job afterwards. That is just an example of how the European Union measures don't tackle these structural problems. Many times they mask these structural problems with small measures that work as a decoration in general politics. I'm guessing that this area is more followed by you, so perhaps you could perhaps talk about the copyright directive and how where we stand in that directive. And I think that's it for now, because I think that Madam Chair has already drawn my attention to the time. Thank you very much, Mr. Member of Parliament. And now it's Duarte Marques from the Social Democrats. Thank you very much. I'd like to greet the Commission on behalf of the Social Democrats. I will be talking slowly, so please give me some tolerance because of the translation. I would like to greet the ambassadors who are here today, and also the representatives of European institutions, and I would like to greet the members of Parliament from the Azores and Madeira. Mr. Commissioner, I was listening to your presentation and I read the work program, and something stands out. It is more realistic and more political than usual. It seeks to respond to concrete problems by these citizens. I don't think Europe shouldn't open up more files, more dossiers, until it solves the problems it has, such as the internal market, the digital economy, the banking union, because there is still a lot to be done, there's still a lot to be solved, and that is the goal that we should focus on. Funnily enough, in your portfolio, you have the Erasmus program, and the Erasmus program and the social initiatives are an area where the European Union doesn't really intervene at national level in this, and yet it was successful. Erasmus is the greatest success, in my opinion, of Europe. It ensures a much more striking European citizenship in an area that doesn't fall under the Commission or the European Union nationally. And the social model is not a competence of the European Union either, the concern should be giving the member states the necessary support for them to maintain at times of need the quality and coverage of their social or welfare state. Perhaps the most relevant question here, and I would like to for you to take this back as a message for the European Commission. We know the European government is trying to reprogram the 2020 program and the partnership agreement to make sure that we have more money for investments that weren't envisaged in that agreement. And we know that there is this 1 billion euros that will be taken from the convergence areas to be able to be used in areas such as Lisbon or Oporto. I would like to say, Mr. Commissioner, that the stage the country is going through and after the tragedy this summer, this cannot happen. The reconvergence areas need investment. They need creativity. They need innovation. They need to create infrastructure. They need to rebuild. And we cannot allow this to become a reality. And Mr. Commissioner, I will conclude by talking about European civil protection. I would like to thank you on behalf of my political party and the country that this did what we expected it to do. It could be more effective. It could be better. It could be expanded. That is true. But the Portuguese would like to thank the assistance that came from Europe. Many times this assistance from Europe arrived quicker than national assistance. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Member of Parliament. And now it's Mr. Member of Parliament António Soares Marinho, who is the Chair of General Policy for the Parliament of the Azores Autonomous Region. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'd like to welcome the Commissioner and the Members of Parliament here, the Ambassadors. Just a small intervention. First of all, I'd like to thank your invitation for us to be here today. We feel that the European Commission work program is determining. It is fundamental because the European Union is present in the country's daily life and, of course, in the Azores' daily life. Through the General Policy Committee, which is responsible for European construction, we will be issuing our opinion. But it is important for us to be able to listen to the Commissioner because we can go delve deeper into some matters. I would like to just make a few remarks and ask a question. I know that the Commissioner, you are responsible for youth, employment, sports, culture. I believe those are the four areas. I won't be speaking about them exactly, or I will be speaking about them also, but I'll be speaking more generally. My remarks have to do with an address by the Commission to the Council, European Parliament, and to the European Social and Economic Committee and the European Central Bank and the Committee of the Regions with regard to a new partnership or this re-equating a partnership with the ultra-peripheral regions in the sense of that it should be strengthened or renewed. This was on the 24th of October, so this was 2 weeks ago. But it's a new approach. Given the challenges now, such as youth unemployment, but also economic factors where there is a lack of innovation, so they haven't been able to be integrated, and the vulnerability also in terms of climate change. This new approach will take into account upstream the specificities of given regions, which obviously means better legislation, stricter partnership, and a customized follow-up, and also access to the European Strategic Investment Funds and assistance to investment in basic infrastructure. At the same time, last week, the 22nd conference of the presidents of the ultra-peripheral regions, and they voiced two concerns. First of all, moving onwards from the intention of the address that I spoke about to its implementation, so there is this concern. So when will it move from paper to action? and also the maintenance of a cohesion policy post-2020. And those are subjects that are now on the minutes of this address. My other question, in this context, there are two subjects that I, these two things that I address. What can the ultra-peripheral regions expect under this work program for 2018, and perhaps even an explicit reference made to the issues I raised, Mr. Commissioner? Now we pass the floor to the Member of Parliament of PSD, so Social Democrats from the Azores region as well, Mr. Nunbelum. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to welcome the Commissioner and the Members of Parliament here in attendance, as well as the ambassadors who are in the room. On behalf of PSD, I'd like to thank you for your presentation and the possibility of engaging us in this discussion. For us, it would be impossible to discuss this without remembering that this is an ultra-peripheral region. For the PSD, the Azores, as a part of a national whole, should be a partner in this European construction and in protecting the European values. That is why we welcome all the projects that have to do with the ultra-peripheries. This is Article 349, which explicitly defines the regions, as well as the permanent restrictions of a geographical nature, as well as the restrictions from the small size and socio-economic dispersal that defines these regions. These circumstances, which are enshrined in the treaty, means that we have differentiated treatment in terms of European measures. This was consolidated in December 2015, thanks to an agreement by the European Court of Justice, the Mayotte decision, which means that we have the status and the prevalence over the European treaties. This is also the time for the new financial agreement when it's being negotiating and the common agricultural policy for the post-2020 period. We now have the opportunity to strengthen the community support that is available and ask for the European Commission to have new specific measures for the ultra-peripheral regions. And we feel that this is now the time to expand all the elements and the legal provisions that may benefit the ultra-peripheral regions. There is no European project without these regions, and the Europe of people is not an alternative to the ultra-peripheries. European citizenship does not exist without social and economic cohesion or freedom. The Mayotte ruling, Mr. Commissioner, taking it into account, we'd like to know how far the European Commission is willing to go in terms of supporting the ultra-peripheral regions, namely financial allocation for agriculture with a suitable configuration to the reality of the Azores, in implementing an autonomous regime for fisheries with its own regulations that makes it independent from the Fisheries and Sea Affairs Funds, and also other measures with transport and energy. I hope that I managed to get everything. He spoke very, very fast. Mr. Member of Parliament, we will now have the Ambassador for Bulgaria, Mr. Vasilikev. No, the Ambassador will not take the floor, so now we will pass the floor to the Director of the Cabinet of the European Parliament in Lisbon, Pedro Valente da Silva. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to welcome the Commission and the Members of Parliament who are here today. My question is perhaps more appropriate for the Council. But what is the Commission's position with regard to the pending proposal of the Council to review the composition of the Parliament, the European Parliament, and the possibility of creating pan-European lists for European elections? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Pedro Valente da Silva. We will now conclude our period for questions for the Commissioner. This was within the timeline that we had. So now we will pass the floor to the Commissioner, Mr. Commissioner, so that you can reply.
Thank you very much. For 30 minutes, if you want.
Thank you very much. It will be more than enough, I think. Thank you for your questions. The broad and comprehensive scope of the questions excellently represents those interesting points which relate to the European future, because undoubtedly we just passed a very important point of decision. You know that after the British referendum, the European Union had to make new decisions and choices about the future. We just approaching to the European parliamentary elections. At the same time, we are preparing the multi-annual financial framework. So it is a good opportunity to take stock of this process and this period's main achievements. And I think our perspectives and plans are very well summarized by the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, when he said that we want to have Europe more united with respect to its diversity and at the same time respecting the principle of subsidiarity. That gives the delicacy of our task and our mission, because while we have to do our best to help member states and to support member states to achieve good results in their plans, policies, and future plans, at the same time we must be aware of not overtaking the responsibilities which is distributed by the treaties between the European institutions and the member states. It is more than true in my areas, in the area of my portfolio, because as you know, education, culture, youth and sport belongs exclusively to member states' competencies, and it gives the beauty but also the difficulty of the cooperation in those areas. So when we talk about future solutions of today's problems, we have to bear in mind that sometimes a European solution is even more complex because of the provisions of the treaty and because of the delicate balance between the member states' competencies and the competencies of the European institutions. As for our big projects, the unions, the single market, the digital union, the capital market union, and the energy union, energy market union, I think we are on time and we are progressing quite well. We just finishing the legislative tasks and proposals and drafts of the digital single market. Yes, one of the most sensitive issues is the copyright reform, which can be a very sensitive point of future discussions, just because we have to strike a good balance between two sometimes opposite points in the proposal. One point is to make the cultural market and the creators' products as accessible as possible for the consumers, and the second point is to keep the well-functioning remuneration system of the creators intact, which means that we have to find a good meeting point of these sometimes antagonistic points. We are working on that together with the European Parliament, and now we are preparing for the voting procedure in the European Parliament, and then we can go to a trialogue with the European Parliament and the Council. But in other aspects, in consumer protection, in data protection, and in other aspects, I think the Digital Single Market Project stands quite well. I mean, we are approaching to the end of these big projects, which can bring in new revolutionary aspects of the digital economies in the European Union. The Capital Market Union is also a very important and revolutionary initiative of the European Commission. We are working on the final refinements of these projects, and I hope that we will succeed to legislate till the end of this political term by 2019. And the energy market is again a very sensitive issue, because I think the energy market is the key of the future economic and political independence of the European Union. You know that one of the weakest points of the energy market inside the EU is the fragmentation, the fragmented nature of the energy market, and on the other hand, the lack of interconnectivity, which is the biggest problem. If we can build up an interconnected infrastructure inside the energy union, if we can solve the difficulties of that kind of communication in energy policy among the member states, then we can create really a single market on energy issues, and that would be a huge step forward. So I absolutely agree with the honorable members of the parliament to support the interconnectivity of different parts of the European energy market, and to overcome the barriers, the internal barriers of this energy market, because I think this is the biggest difficulty and the biggest barrier in the way of the future development, and as I just mentioned, possibly the independence of the European Union, because energy policy is a strategic policy in contemporary Europe and in the contemporary world, as we just can see in this international political conflicts and debates. Youth and youth unemployment. Again, a very critical question, a long-term issue with a long-term solution. I'm deeply convinced that we simply cannot address this challenge taking only the aspects of tomorrow's today's issues, the present-day issues. We have to calculate with the tomorrow, the tomorrow's aspects. Why? Because one of the reasons of the youth unemployment is the economic crisis in the past 10 years. But beyond this economic crisis, there was an even deeper reason of the youth unemployment, and that's the so-called skills mismatch, which is a problem of education systems. That schools and education systems cannot produce up-to-date skills relevant to young people to find proper jobs on the labor market. So what we have to do is to help member states to transform their education systems to make education activities more skills-oriented, not only formal education activities, but also informal and non-formal education activities. That means that we have to embrace NGOs, sports organizations, community centers, even peer groups to equip young people with more relevant, more contemporary skills, above all digital skills. That's quite obvious that digital skills are our contemporary literacy, and we have to educate and to teach and equip young people with proper digital skills, but at the same time, more horizontal types of skills, for instance, entrepreneurial skills. For me, teaching entrepreneurial skills is not only about teaching business activities or making business plans, but teaching a behavior of an autonomous and responsible citizen in a democratic society. It means teaching values, it means teaching autonomous way of living, how to reach consensus, how to debate and discuss issues, how to reach good solutions in a team, how to build up personal networks, and how to build up communities. That's why I think that if we want to tackle the challenge of youth unemployment, we, beyond labor market policy measures, we have to take education, culture and sport into account, and also regional development. That's quite clear that all your problems with the peripheral and ultra peripheral regions, with the rural and remote regions, must be a part of the solution in tackling future youth unemployment. So that's why when we are preparing the next multi-annual financial framework program, and we are designing new policy goals for respective policies of the European Union, I think we must not miss the interests of remote, rural, peripheral and ultra-peripheral regions from the regional policy. We need more targeted regional assistance. We have to identify the special needs of those regions, because diversity sometimes cause uncomfortable situations. There is no one-size-fits-all for us, because we have to identify all those special issues which stems from brain drains, which stems from depopulation of certain areas, which stems from the poor level of education of other areas, and we have to develop special assistance to those regions which are willing to tackle those issues. But youth unemployment is certainly one of the biggest challenges of the future. The EU, the European Union, has only some additional measures to help the member states to tackle youth unemployment. One of them is Youth Initiative. It's an EU project, an EU support scheme, but the delivery, the programs and funding, the responsibility for the implementation of those programs are mostly at member states level or regional level. So we are willing to help the member states, but we need good and proper implementation schemes and implementation plans sensitive to the special needs of the region and sensitive to the special age groups in the youth, for instance. Another special policy instrument can be the European Solidarity Corps. As I just mentioned in my introductory speech, so far we've had almost 40,000 applicants for the activities of the European Solidarity Corps. That's a huge opportunity, but at the same time a huge burden of responsibility to harness the activity of those young people, because if they get bad experiences of the inefficiency of the system or the lack of success or the lack of implementation, that could influence the future perspectives of those young people. That's why we have to behave very responsibly. European Solidarity Corps has two legs, the volunteering part and the employment part of the European Solidarity Corps. Volunteering part, I would say that that's the more traditional one, because we have quite a lot of experiences in the functioning of the European Voluntary Service. We can harness all these experiences, we can use those experiences, and also the partners of the European Voluntary Service. For instance, in the framework of the European Solidarity Corps, we can use all our contacts with NGOs. We used to work in the framework of the European Voluntary Service, and all those schemes which were successful in the European Voluntary Service as well. The employment part of the European Solidarity Corps is a more sensitive one, because it is new. It's an apprenticeship program, and I absolutely agree with the honourable members of the Parliament that there is a danger that some of the companies or some of the authorities can use traineeship programs and apprenticeship programs for replacing real employees with unpaid trainees and unpaid apprentices. We have to tackle this practice, and we have to avoid this practice. We would like to safeguard the quality and the financial conditions of the European Solidarity Corps in order to tackle this practice of replacing the employees with unpaid apprentices. But there is a sensitivity coming from the member states regarding the employment part of the European Solidarity Corps. Some member states protect very eagerly their own labor markets. They're not really welcoming the cross-border apprenticeship programs because they are concerned of lowering the quality of their labor market safeguards, or entering new and young people into their own labor markets. So we have to dissolve these concerns during the trilogue and during the legislative process. If we succeed, then employment part of the European Solidarity Corps can really make a difference in the labor market difficulties of the young people. As for the rule of law and democracy in the European Union, yes, I totally agree with you that we need a reinforced mechanism of the rule of law. We have to clarify the values the European integration based on, and that will be a good opportunity next year when we discuss the education of European values in European education systems, because again, I think if we want to strengthen the democratic foundations of the EU, we have to start with the young generations. Erasmus Plus, education, democratic socialization in European schools can help, and we can build up incrementally a stronger consciousness of the values of a democratic society and also the rule of law. While we are strengthening the elements of the rule of law mechanism, we must not forget about tangible elements of that. The European Public Prosecutor's Office, for instance, can be a very important element of the new rule of law scheme at European level. As for TTIP, well, I think there is a stalemate in the TTIP negotiations, and the lack of mentioning the TTIP in the work program is just an honest lack of mentioning that. We see no perspective for progress at the moment. It's not up to us. The European Union and the European Commission acted on the basis of the mandate given by the Council, And our position has always been open. It was accessible to the public. Now the international circumstances, and we can see that that the new American administration is not really interested in this kind of regional international negotiations. We can see the difficulties with the Trans-Pacific Partnership as well, with the multilateral agreements on the climate change and the protection of environment as well. We have to wait, I think, but we must not give up our ambitions in this aspect as well. Some of you mentioned innovation as a core piece of ambitions for the future. And I really can support this element of the arguments, because we think, I mean, we, the European Commission thinks that without innovation and without a deeper involvement of research and the achievements of research activities, the European Union will lose its competitive edge. That's why innovation will be one of the centerpiece of the next multi-annual financial framework, not least because of the activity of the commissioner coming from Portugal. Carlos Moedas is a very active supporter and front runner of research activities and innovation at European level, and he really defends all these aspects of innovation and the role of innovation in future economy. And I took note of your remarks on the innovation in regional development and CAP, the common agricultural policies aspects. I will pass these messages to my colleagues, just because the reform of the common agricultural policy is just on the agenda. So I think fresh and new and innovative ideas is most welcomed in this process. And as for investments, I'm a really active and staunch supporters of investments. I think the European Union simply suffers the lack of investments in the past 10, 15 years. We need more investments, and we need smarter investments. We need more targeted investments in those areas which can help the European Union to catch up in the world competition. We see the figures, we see the world data, what are the areas where the European Union is lagging behind. Unfortunately, most of the future-oriented policies are the poorest parts of the investments in the European Union. For instance, education, we are lagging behind in education, in investment in education, and that can cause serious problems in the future, because I strongly believe that future competitiveness starts today with today's education. So if we invest in education, we can fund a good fundamental for the future competitiveness and competition policies, and that's why we need more education. The European Commission is well aware of this fact. That's why we started the European Fund for Strategic Investments, which aims at those investments which can help the riskier areas of investment, infrastructure, basic infrastructure, transport infrastructure, but also energy infrastructure. And we just achieved quite spectacular results in this area. That's why we doubled the total amount accessible in the framework of European Fund for Strategic Investments, and in the future we will broaden the similar scheme to Africa as well, because the best neighborhood policy is the revival of the economic growth in those sometimes problematic areas surrounding us. And I hope that more investment will give a boost for not only for the European Union economies inside the EU, but also for the international activities of the European Union economies as well. And as for the question of the representative of the European Parliament, there is no official position of the European Commission on the European list of the MEPs. But Jean-Claude Juncker, the President of the European Commission, endorsed that he thinks it's a good idea, or it's an idea for a good reflection to have a special European list of MEPs. But of course, we have no powers for drafting this proposal. I would say that the European Commission's attitude to this proposal is constructive, but let's see the details in the future. Thank you very much, and once again, thank you very much for your questions and for your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Your answers were very good, very complete, and very methodic. So it was a very fruitful morning of work. Thank you very much for being with us. And you have now work in the Web Summit. So the best for you on your work in the European Commission, and a good stay in Lisbon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Commissioner. Continuaremos às 3.
We will resume our work at 3 p.m. with the Commissioner, Julian King, the British Commissioner, who is responsible for security policy at the European Union. So I will count on you. Enjoy your lunch. See you soon.